It's all well and good, and I think correct, to suppose that happiness is an essential component in any moral system. Surely a moral system which did nothing for people's happiness, which whose edicts, whose stipulations, whose commands were contrary to people's happiness would thereby be a defective moral system. But we shouldn't think that a moral system can be wholly constituted by just one simple idea like happiness. We need to bring in a more complex range of concepts. Particularly, I think, we need concepts of justice, we need concepts of desert, and concepts of rights. The idea that we should violate people's rights simply because that would lead to greater happiness for other people goes against our moral intuition, and rightly so. One of the difficulties about morality, and it's a difficulty which I think will always be with us, is trying in difficult cases to weigh up these different kinds of moral consideration. There will be tough cases in which we will violate somebody's rights, but the consequences will be so great that we can justify doing it. And those are always uncomfortable when those cases arise. If we violate somebody's civil rights in order to prevent terrorism or some such thing, it's an uncomfortable thing morally, but it may be justified. The hard thing in morality is to see what the relative weight is to attach these different kinds of considerations. But I don't think there's any way in which we can eliminate from morality any such conflicts and make morality always a matter where we can just crank out an answer to a question of whether or not a particular action is right. And one of the attractions of utilitarianism, namely that it promises just such a method or recipe for cranking out a straightforward, univocal answer, that very attraction is really what in the end shows that utilitarianism can't be an ultimately correct and complete theory. Well, now that we've considered morality as a whole and what makes something right, a question naturally follows from that. If we describe an action as right or wrong, isn't that connected to the idea of praise and blame? So if somebody does something right, they can be praised. If they do something wrong, they can be blamed. But praise and blame seem to depend upon another idea, the idea that people act freely, according to their own free will. So surely if we're considering the question of right and wrong, we must consider the question of whether we have free will, and if so, what free will is. And that's the topic of the next lecture.
After listening to Lecture 7, a student posed this question to Professor McGinn. Under utilitarianism, wouldn't slavery be acceptable if there were less slaves than masters? Let's listen to the professor's response.
So in the case of slavery as it actually existed, we see that the majority of people were being made to suffer for the well-being of the relatively few. But there's certainly a question we can raise about slavery as not as it actually was, but as it might be. Suppose we had a situation in which you had a relatively small number of slaves who were captured and taken away and their rights were violated. Let's suppose there were 20, and they serviced, let us suppose, 5,000 slave owners, and they were made to do basic chores and not given rights to education and not given right to freedom and so forth. Suppose then it was argued that actually the happiness of the total society, the 5,000 and plus the 20, was greater than it would be if there were not those 20 slaves, because those 20 slaves enabled the superior people to avoid the things which they would find disagreeable to do. So all the things which make their life unpleasant were handed over to the slaves. So then it might be argued that the slave society of that kind was one in which slavery is defensible from a utilitarian point of view, because people are happier overall in that society than they would be without the slaves. The trouble with that, it points out a weakness of utilitarianism, because utilitarianism can't avoid sacrificing the few for the many, because it's the idea of the greatest happiness, the greatest number. It doesn't have any idea of anybody's rights being violated or ideas of desert or justice. So it can't have any objection to a case of exploiting the few for the happiness of the many. And that's a great weakness of utilitarianism. So although it gives the right results in the case of slavery, it does so perhaps for not always the right reasons. And the criticism of slavery, which proceeds rather not from happiness but from the idea of individual human rights, might be actually the more astute and penetrating critique of slavery, not the utilitarian one. The utilitarian one gets it right by accident, but not according to the right principles.
This ends Lecture 7.